EXTC engineer, an investment banker at JP Morgan, an MBA grad from UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business, and a startup co-founder. Viram Shah has done it all. Viram is democratizing international investing as the co-founder and CEO of Vested. In this episode, we learn about his journey in investment banking world, experience in his MBA, his startup Vested, the technology skepticism barrier in India for fintech industry, and advice for entrepreneurs. So let's dive in our conversation with Viram Shah and know more about his journey.
We are three friends who are talking and learning from interesting people, working in various industries, sharing their stories and journeys so far. These are your hosts,
Hiloni Puladar,
Atit Kothari,
and Tapan Desai, and this is What We Had. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any episodes.
So I noticed like you have a US number. Do you travel a lot to US or what's going on?
Yeah. Used to. I used to travel quite frequently. Now I have been in India for a while. But so since I moved there when 2017 and graduated just last year, it feels like it's been like 5 years since I graduated. But came back here in India to India in June, and then have been traveling back and forth, but not since a while.
So taking a step back, right? Did you work after graduating from DJ, or did you directly go for your master's?
I worked. I think I was one of the few to go and take up a job. I think I knew through the program, like through the engineering program, that I wanted to do something in the business world. And so throughout engineering, I think the goal was always trying to get some kind of projects or something or the other on the business side of things. And then eventually just through campus placements, actually got the opportunity to work at JP Morgan. I really had no idea what I was getting into. It's just that JP Morgan is coming to campus, so you have to try and recruit because that's one of the few business roles that you might just get. And so fortuitously ended up there. But yeah, it turned out to be quite an experience. I worked there for about 3 years.
And what was your role there?
So I was working in investment banking. I was the role that they recruit for is part of the middle office, which works on different projects across different industries. So I was working on technology, media, and telecom, largely across Asia. So I joined as a junior analyst, but really got the opportunity to actually work the same way as an MBA in India would. And so that really helped accelerate the growth. And of course, investment banking was again a career that kind of is a sharp learning curve. And so 3 years, but actually I think we worked for about 5 years or 10 years maybe. So it was quite a bit of a journey, but very exciting in terms of developing different skill sets.
Okay. Investment banking in general, like, is pretty famous for its working hours and the learning curve that you spoke about. So, I mean, in those 3 years, like, how have you seen yourself progress, and what has your progression been in terms of the work that you've handled?
Yeah. I mean, I highly recommend it to everybody to start their career with. I think it puts you through a lot of shit that once after you've gone through that, everything else feels like, hey, I mean, this is very easy to do, right? Once you've done a lot of that. So I think that was kind of the experience for me. After that, everything, even the MBA, which a lot of people feel like is a complete shift in gears, did not feel like that. It was that hectic. So from that perspective, just seeing things and kind of putting yourself through it, it was quite interesting. But apart from that, also in hindsight, there are a lot of different learnings. So I, for example, was working with global teams. And so that really helped understand different cultures. I also had a stint in Hong Kong, worked there for a while. So got the opportunity to interact with a bunch of different people, live in a different culture and see how things go. So that was quite interesting. One of the best skills I think that I got to develop, and I think investment banking generally helps with, is attention to detail, kind of ensuring that it's a lot of numbers, a lot of pitch decks, and if, and you have to ensure that that nothing goes wrong. So you have to make sure that that all your calculations check out and everything along those lines. So really gives you that attention to detail, which is helping me now as well, helping through the MBA as well. And so that was good. And to add to it, of course, the brand name helped me progress through the next steps in my career as well.
Mm-hmm. But like you correctly mentioned that you were kind of working at par with somebody who would be an MBA in India. And also like what he spoke about investment banking, we had another guest, Natasha, on the show, and she also started her career with investment banking, and she had a very similar experience that once you do that, moving forward, it's pretty much a cakewalk. But yeah.
We were in the same office.
Oh, you were?
Oh.
Yeah. Same floor, same team. We started, so she was of course 1 year senior to me, I think, but yeah.
Oh,
pretty much the same role.
Interesting. And I think then, I mean, she also moved to an MBA, and so did you. Like, what made you decide on like the next journey or the next path after that investment banking?
Yeah, I mean, Natasha helped me a lot through that, so a shout out to her. She was going through the journey when I had joined, but yeah, so I mean, for me, the decision was, what do I want to do next? And I kind of knew I always wanted to do something entrepreneurship related. Somehow or the other, I wanted to end up there. I knew I did not want to do it in what our family business has traditionally been. I think that was something that I've worked in earlier, spent a lot of time in, and realized that might not be the best for me in terms of just my passion, my interests over the long run. So I was trying to figure out what to do. And naturally, higher studies is an option that opens up a lot of doors, opens up a lot of opportunities. And for me, having gotten that global exposure at JP Morgan, I wanted to continue that and through my higher studies. And so that's why I started looking at MBA programs. But I mean, right now it sounds sorted. In hindsight, it always sounds sorted. But I went through the entire journey of giving the CAT, not getting through in IIMs, and then eventually being at JP Morgan, it struck me like, wait, I'd rather go outside and then study there. And the CAT is not meant for me anyway. So that's how I ended up through the rest of the journey. But yeah, so then I started looking at what I could do. Early on, I started looking at kind of different MBA schools. So in fact, what not a lot of people might not know, I applied, went through an entire cycle of applications and did not get into any of the schools. I got waitlisted at Cornell, and that was my only saving grace. And so, in fact, I took a flight and went to Cornell and kind of met the admissions committee there, saying that, you know, I'm waitlisted. What is it that's wrong? Tell me what to fix, and how will I improve my chances? So, in fact, that's when I got to know ki my GMAT score is not good enough. And so, then went through another. So went through the GMAT again, and then went through an entire. Another round of applications in 2016, and that time got into all of the four colleges that I applied to with scholarships, and so turned out to be a good thing going through that failure, and yeah, so the top one there was Berkeley. The focus of picking schools, so one of the things I did was be very picky in terms of schools, not go for the spray and pray kind of thing, and so picked schools which were I knew had a good general management curriculum and had some focus on entrepreneurship, and Berkeley being in the Valley, being in Bay Area, kind of was on top of my list, and thankfully that worked out. And so then that's when the journey in the US started.
Interesting. So what do you think was different from, you know, in the first year you were not selected, in the second year you got all into all the four schools that you wanted? Did you do something different? What was that?
Also, like, if you could tell us the GMAT score, if you're open.
No. No pressure on anybody's applying. It doesn't need to be that same score. But, I mean, of course, the GMAT score was one thing that was different. But also, I just learned as to how applications are supposed to be. I think one thing that the engineering experience, or even JP Morgan for that matter, didn't give me was that, how do you tell a story, right, in a good way? And that's pretty much what these applications are. And that's what I learned through that first entire journey, where I mean, what I created in hindsight when I look at those essays versus what I did in the second year was such a big difference in terms of storytelling, in terms of putting my entire life journey across, making sense of different decisions. So I think I matured in that aspect. And of course, once you go through that journey, you're much better there. Also, what was better was just targeting and kind of understanding that, hey, this is a, in the end, everything is marketing yourself, and you need to know your audience. So you need to know what those admission folks are looking for and kind of script it in a way that reflects you as yourself, but also reflects what they are looking for you. And so I think that's another thing that I tweaked in my essays and the overall strategy and seemed like it worked.
No, absolutely. It worked. Did you reach out to the admissions office to understand like what they're looking for, or maybe like professors or something?
I did. I was a serial attendee of all of the sessions they used to have in Mumbai. We had a group of people that used to see each other every time, and we'd be like, oh, you. Yeah. I
And you were doing this while you were working full time?
Yes, yes, yes. So that was a little bit of a stretch. I was actually going quite crazy, and which was actually another reason why I decided to limit the school. So also, again, in hindsight, it seems to make a lot of sense, but going for a more concentrated approach with just a few schools, I literally applied to just four, was helpful in making the application strong and giving it my best.
Cool. How was your experience at UC Berkeley? How was the program?
Oh man, it was so good. So good. It just ended last year. It feels like it's almost been, I don't know, 5 years. But 2 years, really good. I mean, there were a lot of things that were really interesting. So one was just contribution to improvement in the career. And there I have a lot to attribute to Berkeley in terms of just getting vested started. My co-founders are my classmates. We got our first funding through my classmates. We won an accelerator that kind of gave us the confidence that this is an idea that might work and people might recognize that, there is an opportunity here. We got the right resources, entrepreneurship resources. One of my favorite classes there was on entrepreneurship. It's taught by these two amazing professors, just going through case studies. So all of those things, essentially the entire ecosystem of just being in an area which is charged with innovation, which is charged with people trying to change the world, was something that contributed towards me eventually finding my way to Vested. So in fact, the first entire year, my co-founder Darwin and I, we worked on a bunch of different ideas. We worked on one which was related to mobility, one which was related to data analytics. None of those really took off. But just that environment kept on pushing us to keep trying. And then eventually in the summer of our first year, the idea of Vested was seeded, and kind of that's where the journey for us began there. So career-wise, of course, there's a lot for us to attribute there. And apart from that, the cliche but true answer is the network that helps you out. And for us, we are a very small knit class. So the Berkeley class, the Haas School of Business, is the smallest MBA program. And that, while it has its disadvantages in terms of just the number of people you can connect with, it has its advantages in being a close-knit community of very talented, driven people. And so you can tap into that network at any point in time. And for me, I was the youngest, I think one of the youngest or the youngest in the program. And so I had so much to learn from all of the others in the class who had come from such diverse backgrounds and had so much of experience. A lot of the times I was just lost. Honestly, I had no idea what I was doing there. But I guess that's where the learning is, when you're outside your comfort zone. So that worked out.
Cool. So let's move to Vested then. So you said the idea was seeded in Berkeley. So how did it start?
Yeah. So, I mean, the seed originally was actually planted during my JP Morgan days, which was when I was covering a lot of these global companies sitting there and really understood their businesses really well. Wanted to invest. I went to my broker in Mumbai and I was like, how do I buy these shares? And he just laughed at me and he was like, you can't do it. Forget about it. It's a cumbersome process. And that just, to a certain extent, felt unfair, especially because I was a consumer of a lot of these companies as well. And I was just like, why do we not get the opportunity to take part in their wealth creation, right? That the value that they're creating, why do we not get the benefit from it if we're contributing to their growth? I mean, that just stayed with me, did nothing about it then. And then when we were in the summer of Berkeley, both, so Darwin and I, we both were doing our internships in a completely random area, which was not related to Vested. So he was at a VC. I was at another startup. And that's when this idea came back to us. He originally comes from Indonesia. And so we both connected on the fact that, you know, access to the US markets outside of the US is just a very difficult process. And it was both our personal pain points. What we did then was kind of tried and understood if it was a pain point for all of the other people that we knew in our network as well. So we ran a bunch of experiments.
One of your first, I think one of your market research person. I remember you when talking about this whole thing. Asking
exactly.
How am I managing? And I think I was very, very pro that, okay, I'm in the similar situation I was in. I wanted to invest in US markets, but all I could do is via friends here, but not doing it by myself. So definitely solving a problem.
Yeah, you have no idea how many times my cousins and all in India are like, how do I invest in Amazon? Like, can you do it on my behalf? So yeah, that's definitely a pain.
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the experiments that we ran as well. What we did was we created an Excel sheet of 10 companies and ran some Facebook ads on it saying that, hey, you want to invest in the US market, sign up here. And then we would reach out to the people who would sign up, send them this Excel spreadsheet saying that, okay, here are 10 companies. If you want to invest in them, send us money. We'll invest from our brokerage accounts and we'll give you the money back 6 months later, wherever it is. And literally people sent us through PayPal about $500 to invest in 5 companies. And the fact that somebody trusted strangers on the internet to invest proved to us that the need was so high that there is something here to be done. And so that's when we decided, okay, let's go ahead and build it out and then see how things go along.
Wow.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was a great example of how you did like A-B testing or early stage market validation, right? Product market fit.
Exactly.
Very important to know, like, your idea would be great, but do you even have an audience that wants it, or is it in the right stage? And I think right now when like investments is something that a lot of people in India are looking at, and global investments, I think it's the right time, I would say, for you guys to like track on this market.
Yeah, I hope so. And a lot of this experimentation mentality comes from Berkeley, where the lean startup, Steve Blank, that's he used to teach there, and he has until our year, he used to teach the course there as well, which is where this entire learning came from, about kind of test before you invest. And so that helped us in the initial phases, of course. Also customer interviews, like talking to Hiloni and a bunch of other folks and seeing whether they'd be interested in something like this.
Right.
Nice. So I think you're far along the first year path, and now I think you are almost 2 years into the company. So, I mean, startups have their own stories and their own journey, and we would love to know more about how has it been from you from starting in a campus to now moving to India and expanding it.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. I don't know where to start. It's been crazy. We often feel like, I was just talking to the team today, and we often feel like it's so chaotic. But when you look at our numbers 5 months before and now, you feel like, okay, we have made some progress at least. So that's what keeps you going through the entire thing. But yeah, in terms of the journey for us, the first six months was doing customer research. Then we got a license with the SEC, launched our product in a beta product, private beta in March, launched our app in October. That's when really things started kicking off. And now we've recently launched some partnerships with Axis Bank, with 5paisa, Kuvera. So a bunch of different financial institutions already in India to power US investing for them. So that's been super interesting. It's a humbling journey. We are learning quite a bit. We were just last year, this time we were 5 people sitting around a table trying to create a product. And now we're suddenly a team of 30 people. And so there's definitely things that we are learning on the go. And, and figuring it out as it goes.
What's your role like in Vested right now?
It's a chief everything officer.
Every startup owner ever.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I mean, a little bit of everything. Majorly have a fire hose which puts off fires most of the time. And so that's firefighting is most of the time. That's what we're doing. But apart from that, for me, it's looking largely at fundraising. Looking at getting the right people on board and then just trying to ensure that our strategy is or ensure what our strategy is firstly, and then are we sticking to it or not. So those are the three primary objectives, but then apart from that, it's a bunch of different things.
I just signed up for, like, I downloaded the app like very recently and went through the whole onboarding process. And I have to say, like, it's one of the, you know, most smoothest onboarding experience I've had with an Indian finance company. Like I did explore like other apps for my sister. I was setting up an account, brokerage account for her. So yeah, well done with that. Like I love the smooth, the technology stack and the engineering in me. Like what is the stack that you guys are using?
So, I mean, all of us, the entire stack is JavaScript. So we use React on the front end and Node on the back end. And and great that you mentioned it, a shameless plug. We can also use Vested for NRIs. So anybody in the US or London wants to use it, then give it a shot. Whoever doesn't have an SSN is actually our target market because they can't. This was a pain point I felt when the first year I was at Berkeley, I didn't have an SSN. And I had no idea how do I access any of the investment products there in the US. And so new students coming to the US, actually, I found this very useful a solution.
Mm-hmm. But would you be investing at the same price you would otherwise invest if you had an SSN in US?
Yeah. Everything else is the same.
So, you know, when I look at certain startups, I usually ask this question, like, why is this the right time? Why now? Right? Why did Vested was like in 2005? And what do you think is like, what changed to make this happen now?
So there were a few things. So one is, I mean, the way we looked at it was, is there a problem that we faced and do a bunch of other people face that problem? That was the core starting point for us. Kind of rather than thinking from a top-down macro perspective, saying that, hey, is this the right time or is the market ripe for it or not? So the start for us was that, okay, is this a problem or not? And can we validate it? And then as we progressed, we found out more about the industry because, of course, this was a new industry for us. And we found out about the industry more and then got to understand, okay, why now is the right time? And what has happened in our segment is that it's basically an entire ecosystem that is now available to offer such a product. Like, for example, to be able to create a investment platform in such an easy manner without having to plug into the exchange and spending 2 years getting a license and things like that. So that is one of the key things that has changed now. And it's largely because fintech is moving towards a completely API world. And so that's one of the big reasons. And also the other thing is around the investing, around that money movement is becoming easier. So sending money across borders is now becoming more cost effective, more easier. Bringing money back is becoming more easier. And then on the macro level in India, just generally financial participation is increasing. COVID helped increase the education among the investor base about investing in financial products and moving money from the FDs, the fixed deposits and real estate into financial products is something that is a larger trend that is happening in India. So all of those things are kind of tailwinds for a product like ours.
Interesting. So you spoke about like your role also being getting like VCs on board. So, I mean, 50% or more companies in India are not VC driven. Most of them are bootstrapped. So what made you like want your company to be from the beginning a VC driven company? And what are the add-ons that you look at when a VC comes on board apart from the monetary investment that they bring with them?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. For us, we wanted external investors because for us, the goal was we want to maximize the impact of what we are doing. And that is only possible if there is money that you have to be able to acquire users on a larger scale. The other was also that what we want to do requires investment upfront, but the return is not, I mean, the revenue doesn't start kicking in immediately. And so again, you need some kind of fund sources to be able to cover up that initial. In fact, we're still going through that phase where the product is not where we want it to be pretty much. So to cover up this entire phase where our revenue is still ramping up, we're still figuring out the business model, we needed external investors. So that was one of the, just from the needs perspective, why we needed it. The other is what is additional for us and what we look for is some kind of strategic value add. And so there, what we've done is we've, from India, we have onboarded a bunch of folks who are from the fintech industry. So the founders of BharatPay, the founders of RazorPay, they have invested. There are a bunch of folks from the US who have worked in the fintech world. So that helped us avoid a lot of mistakes that we could have made as first-time entrepreneurs. We still do make a lot of mistakes, but some things that we were taught we could avoid. And so it's just mistakes are going to be made, but how can you shortcut your time to those learnings? And so that's where the hack is to get investors who help you through that.
Okay. And how difficult has it been or how easy has it been for you to onboard these investors?
I don't know. Maybe if I start another company, I'll know how difficult or easy it is generally. But I mean, it's the same. I think across startups, you pitch to 100, 200 investors, maybe one or two will say yes. I don't think I'm different from anybody else. But the key, as we go ahead, we're learning about how you target the right investor. There is somebody in the world who will likely want to invest in you, and it's your job to find out who that is. And so that's what you have to look at. We of course got lucky. So one of the biggest lucky breaks for us was we got the founders. So Ashni, one of the founders of BharatPay, he has invested in us right from the beginning. So how we got through to him was we basically used to call up everybody who signed up on our wait list. And so he was one of the folks who had just randomly seen our ad and signed up. And through the conversation, mid-conversation, he goes like, hey, if I wasn't working on BharatPay, I would have been working on what you're doing. So why don't you take my money? And so that's how we actually got our first angel investor. And he has been instrumental in connecting us with the ecosystem, connecting us with potential partners, with other VCs who might want to invest. So we definitely got a lucky break in terms of finding these investors. I don't know what we would have done otherwise.
Wow, that's a cool story. A Facebook ad could take you so long.
Yeah, exactly. And just talking to people who are signing up.
Yeah, I mean, you could have sent like an automated email saying that, hey, all of this. You did things that didn't scale in the beginning, right? Like you called up each and every one, understood what they want to do. So, yeah, I think that also has.
Yeah. And that too in the US while they were in there. It was calls until like 4 a.m. I remember, man. It was exciting though. That's one of my favorite parts of the job, actually. Just talking to customers, I still do it. And it really gives you so much perspective about what needs to be done in the product, what they want from you and how you're impacting their lives.
Awesome. So being like a CEO and also being an engineer, being a young CEO, I would say, like, what is your advice that you would give to anybody who is starting out in this ecosystem? And like, because you have a tech product as well, like, how do you work with tech teams at the same time working with your VCs? I mean, they're two different games, and how do you bridge the understanding of what your product is and how you want to scale for both of those?
In terms of just general advice, Gyan, one which is I've always implemented is this learning about test before you invest. Actually, that's always stayed with me, and something which I feel I was also making that error when I was trying to start something earlier, where I was just going straight to the app. Not thinking about, like, I know there's a problem, but not thinking about customer discovery, about figuring out what is the solution. I mean, not leading with the solution, leading with the problem first. And I think that's a very fundamental shift in thinking. The other is, I mean, just what I'm realizing about business, and actually this comes from one of my favorite books about Benjamin Franklin, his autobiography. He talks about the fact that just need to keep doing it. Business is not tough. You just need to keep doing it day after day and show up even when the days are bad. So as long as you keep doing that, I think you will make enough progress, compound that over time to be able to do the right thing in business. So that's again one thing that I constantly think of. In terms of building teams, I mean, I haven't built that big a team yet, so TBD. But what I have seen is that at least in the early phase, you want to work with somebody who you trust. I think that's the biggest thing. More than anything else, in a startup, you want people who you can say, "Ki, you know, do this," and they go ahead and do it for you. You don't have to worry about it. So you need to be able to trust them to do that. And the other thing is just hire for cultural fit, right? You should be able to feel like this person will be a good fit of what your company represents. Everything else can be learned.
Okay. So this is like a personal question. You have, I remember like listening somewhere on one of the other podcasts that you were on, you had like a group where instead of investing in some story about the gold rush. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, happy to. I mean, so again, that's what I was saying, right? We tried a bunch of different ideas and so we had this group, Darwin, one of our classmates, Lauren and I, where we would just spitball ideas constantly. And they even had this joke that post 11 o'clock, I don't know, somehow all the ideas used to come to me. So once it was post 11 o'clock, they would be like, here are Viram's shitty ideas. And so I would just keep posting a bunch of different things. And then we would just, they would be great soundboards. Of course, they also had ideas. And we were all just soundboards to each other. And what that helped us do was just keep our thought process going. Because a lot of times with entrepreneurship, it's like keeping that momentum going is what you need. And that's where a co-founder comes in very helpful. And so that's what that group helped us do. At one point, we had this realization that, everything on it's basically everything is going to be run by infrastructure companies, like API companies. And so the group's name then became Finding Pickaxes, which is you want to find the problems where you can give the tools and not give them the gold, like not do something on top of it, or the infrastructure, be the infrastructure eventually. So that's where the opportunity is going to be.
In the end, eventually, everything that's going to stay back is your creative thinking. Most of the other things are going to be
correct. Correct. Yeah, that's what as humans, we value add pretty much.
Yes. So what's next in store for you?
Lots of things. Lots of exciting things, actually. In terms of the product itself, we want to do a couple of additional things. So the fund transfer process is still not as streamlined as we want it to be. We are part of a Techstars program right now that's going on in Denver. Unfortunately, it's virtual. Otherwise, I would have been where you guys are as well. It's the demo day for that is coming up. And so we are just prepping for that. In terms of the product, what we want to go towards is basically US investing is the first thing that we have started. What we want to do is allow people from Asia and the Middle East largely to build a US dollar store of value. We have been lucky enough to go to the US and kind of get that opportunity. But a lot of people don't until they live abroad. And so what we want to do is you should be able to do that anyway. So invest in the US public markets, invest into other asset classes in the US, or spend those dollars as well. So if you want to travel abroad, study abroad, you should be able to access that. So kind of a cross-border wealth platform is where we are going towards. And so lots of different products coming up in the store. And overall, we just recently raised a round of funding. So now focused on executing the product and making sure that our existing customers are happy. And then how can we make sure that we keep acquiring new customers? We launched a few partnerships there as well with some fintechs. And so keep that going is the goal.
Where are you investing your money these days?
Oh, of course in the US. But I mean, it's across the spectrum. I'm not much of a individual company investor. I'm more of long-term ETFs, keep it simple kind of investor. So passive investing. Also, I used to love doing research when I was at JP Morgan and had the bandwidth to do it then as well. But now it's more passive investing.
Yeah, money is such a personal thing, right? Trusting technology in India, especially, is like people are skeptical. So how did you manage that initially before COVID? Now I think people are much more technologically literate and trusting because they've used it now. But how did you manage that like before? Like how did you go about educating people that, you know, we're not going to run away with your money?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And still the biggest challenge, even pre-post COVID, also still the biggest challenge we face is trust. And what makes it even more difficult is that India in general is a very trust deficit market, and people have just been scammed so many times that anything new that comes up is automatically a scam in your head. And so getting people over that barrier is one of the biggest challenges that we face. Of course, it's become lesser. First, we also had the challenge of educating people, this is legal. You can invest in the US markets from India. It's not illegal. So that was one of the big things. But then also on the trust factor, some of the things that we did was, one, as founders, we used to put ourselves out there, putting a kind of a face to the company, saying that, hey, we will help you through the journey and make sure that things are fine for you, because this is completely under the regulatory environment. It is okay. We ran this entire campaign of giving people a $5 bonus whenever they would open a vested account. And so what that did was, a lot of people had no idea how fractional investing works, for example. How do you buy a fraction of a share in India? In a DMAT account, you're supposed to get one full share. That's it. How do you get fractions? How does trade confirmations work? How do you get statements if you're investing in the US? So people would use these $5, buy and sell, get comfortable on the platform, and then transfer funds. So that was one of the big things that helped us, a kind of a seeding for customers. And we stopped it over time. But that was super important for us to build that initial trust. And then apart from that, you just have to be proactive with your one of the key things is customer service or customer success. And you just have to be very proactive with that and answering people's queries.
We will begin with the top three books that you would recommend, and which is one of the most gifted books and why.
Ooh, top three books. Let's see. So, one is Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, one of my favorite books. The second is this book called Mindsets, again, one of my favorites, written by Carol Dweck. Changed my thinking in terms of just how you're supposed to think about things in life. And the third one for me, that's a tough one. There are quite a few of them actually that are, so one which I really like, there's a book which I randomly found when I was walking through a bookstore in Berkeley, one called Siddhartha's Brain. It is very interesting. So I like a lot of psychology and things to do with how history has evolved and how humans have evolved. And this book, basically what it does is it explains through science what enlightenment is and what actually is going on when you learn about enlightenment and what's happening in the brain. Very interesting. And coming from the religious background that I come from, always you're taught these things, but never really understand it in the language that we have studied as engineers. And so that really opened up my mind, saying that this is possible. This is actually something that every human can achieve. And that set me on this entire path of understanding the importance of meditation, how that helps you control your mind and essentially how you have a choice in terms of how you respond to things rather than just let things happen to you. So that was a kind of a snowball effect into a lot of things, but just randomly found it one day while walking in a bookstore. So, which is why I have a more special connection.
Wow. I think coming from a Jainism background, that's something you've heard since like the beginning of like teaching Jainism, that everything you're doing is towards like moving towards an enlightenment stage and every action of yours is taking you there. But yeah, I mean, putting more perspective to it and actually that is something that humans can achieve, that would be, I'm definitely going to do like give this a read.
Yeah, you should for sure. I come from a Jain background. And so that's exactly what I was trying to say, where things are just told to you, not really explained. And I think in today's world, nobody really takes things at face value. And so that really helped me understand a lot of things. I think there was another question on most gifted book, right? Let me think about it. I think 7 Habits of Effective People, I think that's a common answer. But again, a very, very interesting book that I tend to give to people.
Top 3 podcast or YouTube channel recommendations?
I'm a big podcast junkie. So I have lots of podcast recommendations. I started my journey with How I Built This. That's how my love for podcasts began. And now there are quite a few. There is one which I really like. I mean, a lot of what I listen to is actually entrepreneurship related and startup related. And so there's one by GGV Capital, one of the investors across China, India, I mean, pretty much across the world. They talk about startups across different countries. Very interesting podcast. There's one which is called Invest Like the Best, again, related to finance. It's by Patrick O'Shaughnessy. And let's see, which are the other ones? I like Reid Hoffman's podcast as well. That's really good. And if you're looking to listen to some podcasts in India, there's one called Pesa Vesa, which is very good. And there's one called Shunya One, which is also really good.